Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air. This is Sergeant Dan Meredith of Unit 99 at Headquarters, Police Department, City of Sacramento, California. My detail is to ride in Unit 99, our tape recorder-equipped radio car, and to respond whenever the dispatcher transmits a signal to one of our other units on duty somewhere in the city. At the scene, we make the recordings which we provide for this program. Now, to tell you more about Unit 99, here is our chief, James V. Hicks, Sacramento Police.
The job of a police officer is your protection. The cases you hear on this radio program are real cases. The police are real. The victims and the criminals are real. We are glad to provide Unit 99 and Sergeant Meredith so that you will hear how the police of a great city work night and day for your protection. Make no mistake about it. There are no actors on these tapes. They are real from beginning to end. Now to Unit 99 and Sergeant Dan Meredith on duty.
Unit 99.
99, go ahead.
924 Detectives, 99.
924 Detectives, roger.
KMA 907.
We got a couple of pretty good safe men the other night. One's a real pro. We're going to talk to him. Hello, Detective Dahl. I just got a call to come into the Detective Bureau. Do you know anything about it?
Well, I know something about it. We are going to bring one of the boys down and question him in regards to the 45 automatic fully loaded he had in his possession, plus some burglar's tools.
Well, that was one of two that were arrested the other night before last?
Yes, sir. That was one of the two.
Are you going to bring him down now?
Right away. We would like to question you, sir, in regards to the case in which you were picked up the night of May the 30th. You arrived in California on what date?
Sunday night, the 27th.
Of May.
Of May.
Correct. What was your object in coming to the state of California?
See if there was some easy money to find.
What type of easy money, or how are you going to secure this easy money?
Well, I was thinking one safe or maybe two, and then I'd go back east. That's all it would be.
So then when you arrived in San Francisco on May the 27th, what day or how long after that did you contact this friend of yours that you've known practically all your life?
I went to his house where I thought he was living, and I left a note that night, and the next day I met him.
What was the topic of discussion between the two of you?
How to get some easy money around here.
Did the two of you, in a car belonging to someone else, drive to Sacramento prior to the night you were arrested?
Yes, we did. We came up one day, night, late at night, just to see what the town looked like at night.
And at that time, you did look over several business establishments that had in view or in mind the fact that you were going to try and enter the safes. Is that correct?
We didn't have general businesses. We had general districts. And we went through several districts that night that looked, we didn't know whether they looked good or not, and we decided we wanted to come back in the daytime.
Well, you had arrived, I think you told us, in town.
Yeah, in the afternoon.
In the afternoon, around 4 o'clock, and
yes.
You attended a show, got out of the show around 9:30 or 10 o'clock.
That's right.
Then, what did you do after that?
We drove around, we looked, we just didn't see something, we didn't see anything that looked good, we were just ready to leave. And they found us.
In other words, you didn't have time to pull a job.
Oh, we weren't even going to pull one. That's what makes it worse.
Well, I understand the officers saw you in an alley next to one of these addresses that you had on you. Wasn't your intentions at that time with this equipment that you had on you and your partner had on you to make a safe in this particular area where you were?
Before we went into the area, yes, but when When the officer spotted us, we were just ready to leave because we didn't like it.
Why didn't you like it?
There was no protection of any kind in the area, and we just decided we didn't like it, and we were just heading out of it.
Well, you say the officer spotted you. Were you on a street or in an alley at the time that they first saw you, or do you know?
In an alley.
In an alley.
We think.
Then what happened after that? Just tell us what happened, if you remember correctly, because we weren't there.
Well, I think we were spotted in the alley, but I just saw a light behind us as we were leaving the alley. And I didn't think it was a squad car. I thought it was a car just driving past the other end. And we were just walking out of the alley and down to our street, and we saw the patrol car come. We were on the street when we saw it. Then we decided we better get out of there.
Then what did you do?
Well, after the squad car drove past, we ducked in past some houses. And when it went past again, we got out and we're going to move farther on.
And then what happened?
About 9 squad cars.
Did you know at the time that when you both, when you were stopped with a squad car and your partner, did you know that he was arrested right there at the time when I stopped him?
Yes.
You knew that at the time. Well, when did you do that?
I jumped a fence, got in by some trees and tried to hide.
And then you hid in some shrubbery alongside of the house, is that correct?
Yes.
Then what happened?
They went through the yard about 3-4 times with flashlights, and I was just about ready to try to climb top of the house when they came back again.
Then they did spot you there in the shrubbery.
Yes.
And that's when you were placed under arrest.
That's right.
Do you mind telling us what you had on your person at the time of your arrest?
A .45.
And the gun was completely loaded, entirely loaded at the time, huh?
No shells in the chamber.
But you did have the clip in the gun?
There was a clip in the gun, but no shells in the chamber.
Now, there's a little periscope in a wooden box that I would like to have you explain to us, if you will, that you were carrying also at the time of your arrest.
Was this it, Donald?
This is it in the box, just as it was taken from you.
Well, it is used in industry as looking into holes in precision machine work to see whether there's an even, where you can't look by eye so that you can see inside there to see whether there is any defects in the cuts. 3/8 of an inch in diameter, 10 inches length. For practical purposes.
That's the rod here.
Yes. And it has two lenses. One is a prism, and the other one is an offset optical lens.
I see there are some little flashlight bulbs and wires, springs. How do you use that?
They go on the end to make a light inside.
What purpose were you going to use this instrument?
That's fairly obvious.
Well, explain it to us.
Well, if you can see what's inside of a safe, then you know that's all there's to know.
How would you be able to see inside of a safe?
By making a hole in the safe.
Boring it or knocking the dial off?
Boring it, naturally. Mm-hmm.
And could it be used, too, to check the tumblers in the combination?
Yes, it could.
This particular night that you were arrested, you were carrying these guns, were you not?
Yes.
What was the purpose in carrying these guns?
Fear, more than anything else.
Fear?
Usually, if a police officer would come up on us, not maybe a police officer, but one of these door pushers, and they see something, they might stand around looking and not do a thing, but then, just try to stop us from getting out. But if you shoot a couple shots in the air, just up in the air or any place else, they'll run like the glory.
Well, the night that you were picked up, there were a couple of officers that overtook you and your partner. When you were hiding in the bush, in this backyard, did you think of using that gun?
There was no shell in the chamber, and I had over 10 minutes to put a shell in it if I would have wanted to use it.
When you went to case a job or look over a safe, you always had in mind that the safe had to have considerable money before it'd be worth the effort to open it. Is that correct?
Yes, for the last, since way back, that's the way I believed.
In other words, what would be a amount that you would set it at, but the smallest amount before you would open a safe, that is, by your own opinion, by looking at it?
In the business, I'd say $2,500 to $5,000, I'd win between those sums.
In other words, you wouldn't care to go into the operation and work on a safe for $500 or $800 or $1,000?
No, why waste your time on something small when there's some big ones around?
After you've been prosecuted in court on this particular case, have you any plans on continuing this kind of life?
I figure I'll have 4 or 5 years in jail at least. And in that time, I got about 2.5 years of civil engineering studying. And I figure I can find out enough knowledge in the time I'm in jail to get myself a decent education.
What are the charges that you and Sergeant Lyons are going to file against this man now?
The charge has already been filed. One of them is en route to the FBI, and the other one is a penal code section of the state of California, section 12025, which is an ex-convict in possession of a firearm, also possession of burglar tools.
Sometimes I think good police officers have a sixth sense. There was no obvious reason for the patrol car officers to be suspicious of the two men they observed on the sidewalk. But the fact that they were suspicious and returned for a second look provoked the suspects into betraying themselves. The man you just heard was a professional, and there is no doubt that his timely arrest prevented a series of safe robberies. He was turned over to the FBI for prosecution in Michigan.
Drunk driver involved in an accident. Let's take a look at it.
We're at 9th and N, heading eastward. A block away, there's a flare in the middle of the street. A car on the northeast corner of the intersection. Another one behind it. I can't see just yet who it is. The unit's here. Let's get out. Officers Clark and Tinker are here.
Do you have your driver's license, sir?
I have it. Yes, he has.
What is your story now, sir? How did this accident take place?
Well, they stopped rather suddenly. Two girls. That's all I can say.
How close were you following this other vehicle?
Well, I say about 15 feet.
About 15 feet, and what was your approximate speed?
About
25 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Have you been drinking tonight, sir?
I had a couple of beers, yes.
Mm-hmm. How long ago, sir?
Well, I would say an hour.
An hour ago?
Approximately an hour, yes.
That's when you had your last drink.
Yes, sir.
Where's the other car that's involved?
The other car is parked across the intersection.
Uh-huh.
It's on the north-hand side of the street, parked legally at the curb.
Well, here comes Officer Tinker. Maybe he might tell us something about their statements.
No, I haven't called a tow truck. Is there any special tow truck you'd like to have for your car? You won't be able to drive it. It's pretty well smashed up.
Have you any idea who you'd like to have your car sent to?
Yeah, Governor Knight.
Governor Knight?
Yeah.
Why Governor Knight?
Because he's a friend of mine.
He's a friend of yours?
Yeah.
Well, what's he going to do with your car after he gets it?
Burn his garage.
Why do you think you'd do that? Now, would you want to bother the governor at this time?
Yeah.
Clark,
yes,
this
sir.
Gentleman would like to have his car
sent to Governor Knight. You think that we could do that?
Why not?
Well, that wouldn't be wise, though. Truthfully, would it?
See?
Mm-hmm.
You talk sense.
Well, how about giving the officer the garage to where you'd like to have your car sent?
Well, as a matter of fact, let's do it this way.
Okay.
Will you do me a favor?
Do the best we can.
All right. Call Governor Knight.
I'll tell you what we'll do, Clark. We'll try to do something for this fella. Do you want to have him taken in and have him checked for injuries and such?
Yes, Dan, we are. We're going to take him in and have the doctor examine him.
Okay, then. The other car gone, Tinker? Tinker, is the other car gone?
Yes.
What did the driver of that car say?
She was stopped for the red light. She didn't know anything about the accident until it happened. She was sitting there waiting for the light, and the impact surprised her because she didn't even see the car in the mirror.
In other words, she was stationary at the time.
Yes.
What do you want her to say?
Well, I'd like to get your statement now on how this accident occurred.
Well, I'll say what you want me to say.
Did you see this other car at all before you
saw
it?
Of course I saw it.
How far away was your car from it?
About 15 feet.
15 feet. And your estimate speed, sir, at that time, when you realized the danger?
Well, for goodness sakes, I mean, make it the way you want it. Just call Governor Knight. You're making such a big thing out of this small situation.
Medical examination established that this man was intoxicated. He was charged with drunk driving and paid a $263 fine to avoid 60-day jail sentence. Incidentally, the governor was not notified.
Unit 99.
99, go ahead.
924, 99. 940, unit 56.
924.
Check 99, came in
07. Traffic units must have something for us.
Clark, you and Hilton call us in?
Yes, sir, we did, Sergeant. We have a very unusual case here. This gentleman states he was struck by a vehicle on K Street, just east of 16th Street.
Was he in the street?
No, he was on the sidewalk. Now we have several witnesses that stated that this man deliberately laid down in front of a vehicle and dared the car to run over him.
And then the car didn't hit him?
No, the car did not. So we took a accident report, and this gentleman has signed it.
Oh, he signed this report?
Yes, he has. And we have received information that this is the second time that this has occurred, right in this same location.
I see. Well, are you going to talk with the fellow now?
Yes, we are.
All right, Captain Richard.
Hello, Sergeant Meredith. You want to come in here? Will you tell us what happened down there at 16th and K?
Yes, I was walking home from Sam's Hospital on J Street, as I recall it, past Stan's drive-in, and I was walking on the sidewalk, and the car drove up against me and bumped into me, and I asked the man to drive back so that I could walk on the sidewalk.
Did it knock you down?
No, it did not at that time. And I asked him to back off, and when I asked him to back off, he drove forward and knocked me down.
Were you injured?
No, I was not injured.
Been drinking?
Yes, I have been drinking.
How much?
I don't know. I've only had a few. No, are you inferring that I've had a lot? Drink.
Well, no, I'm trying to get what the amount was that you did have.
I had a few drinks at home, and I don't know how many, because you don't gauge them at home, you see.
Well, according to the officer's report here, they have a different version, according to witnesses, of what happened down there, what you say.
Well, there were no witnesses, you see. There was only the driver of the vehicle.
Well, now that the officers tell us that they have quite a few witnesses you did not get hit.
Well, there was a lot of kids showed up very shortly afterward, but there were no witnesses.
Did an incident like this happen to you previous?
No incident.
I mean, in the last week or so?
No incident has ever happened to me like this in my whole life.
Has this man been checked in the emergency for injuries?
No, he has not. He refuses to be treated.
Or he refuses? Examined,
or to be examined. He says he's not injured.
Well, I think for his own good, he should be examined to see the extent of his injury, don't you think?
I have not been injured.
Well, Officer Clark, let me ask you this. Did some witnesses say that the man was not struck by the car?
We have several witnesses. In fact, we have seven that stated this man was not struck by a vehicle.
Well, what is their version of it?
They stated this man walked up to a car that was stopped, leaned on the hood, and dared the car to run over him. When the driver refused to go forward, he laid down in front of the car. Then another car drove up to go into the drive-in. He scooted over in front of the other car.
Well, is this a fact?
This is not a fact. There's no truth at all.
Well, Officer Clark, did some witness there say that this man had been involved in an incident, something similar to this, in the past?
I heard that. Yes, they did. They stated it was in the early part of this week that the same thing occurred.
And they identified this man as the man, positively?
Yes, they did.
Do you wish to prosecute?
I don't mean to create any commotion of any kind. I certainly didn't waste that. I don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think it would be a good idea to go down to the emergency hospital and let them check you over?
No, I'm not injured.
You don't need to be checked over.
Not at all. This is something entirely new to me. I know nothing about what I'm doing. I'm a little scared. May I be?
Why, surely.
All right.
This is our position in this now. We're going to turn this over to our investigator. And we have so many conflicting witnesses in this, that is, witnesses that say that you wasn't struck by this car, and you have signed a report that you were. Now, that's a false report. We're going to turn this over to our investigator, and it may be that they will issue a warrant for your arrest for filing a false report.
This was an unusual case for which there is no logical explanation. The preponderance of evidence was against this man. He was fined for filing a false report.
This is Unit 99. These on-the-scene tape recordings were provided by the Sacramento Police Department and were made on duty by Sergeant Dan Meredith in Unit 99. Your host is Chief James V. Hicks of the Sacramento Police Department.
KMA 907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air.
Unit 99 has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.